Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. With me this week, Chris Buccinani. Chris, thanks for being on the show.
Oh, happy to come in and pinch hit anytime, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's a good cause. Our buddy Dustin Schutte, he got married over the weekend, Chris. I guess he deserves for us to give him the week off.
We're going to let it go this one time.
Once. But that's it. He better be back next week ready to go. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about college sports. And I can't think of anyone better than you to talk to, Chris, about this. There's a new bill coming out, bipartisan, which you would think would help get it through, to fix college sports. And the problem I usually have with any of these fixes is there seems to be groups who fix problems before they define what the problem is.
Yeah.
So before we get into this bill and how it would fix college sports, I'm going to ask you this question. Tell me what the problems are. What is wrong with college sports that needs to be fixed?
Oh, boy. We could spend an entire show just on that, Jim, but I guess having the question sprung on me, which I'm not complaining about, I like, because you're going to get my top of mind reaction. I honestly believe that it's two things. Number one, I don't think the general public, the including the subsection who are rabid fans of college football and to a lesser extent basketball and the other sports, as well as most of our elected leaders, really understand what college sports is. Like, if I had to explain to an alien from Mars what the American system of college sports is and diagram it and explain it to somebody with absolutely no knowledge, I think what I diagrammed out and explained would actually look very little like what the average person thinks of when they think of college sports. And so that's a problem because people can sense intuitively maybe that there's something wrong with it, but they'll struggle to diagnose what it is because they don't really understand how complicated the thing is under the hood when you look at it. So that's problem number one. And problem number two is that I think the institution of college sports, which ultimately comes down to, in reality, the presidents and leadership of the member institutions that make it up. So university presidents and university leadership, that's trustees and other key decision makers, primarily at the big schools that anyone in the audience would think of if I say, who are the powers in college football? Who are the teams that make it go? And not just the blue bloods, but everyone down to, you know, the universities of Arizona and Central Florida's of the world, writ large, that group, have so miserably, and I include the suits in Indianapolis and NCAA headquarters in that equation, they've so miserably mismanaged the responsibility of modernizing the sport over the last 25 to 30 years, that what I think the average person would point to as the major issues in college sports right now, which is that nobody really knows who's eligible or for how long or why not. There seems to be absolutely no rhyme or reason to who can and can't be paid and what they can and in the amounts they can and can't be paid, and whether or not you're a good person or a bad person if you think it seems reasonable that there ought to be some kind of restriction on what players can make in order to bring some sensibility and level the competitive playing field in terms of what teams can and cannot realistically compete against each other. All of those things, I can't get emotionally invested in my team anymore because I don't know who the players are going to be from moment to moment and certainly year to year. All of those are downward pressures. Not to mention a little bit of the same issue that's now been plaguing the NFL, which is I don't know where to find games. Sometimes they're on a television station that I can get over the air. Most of the time, I either have to have cable or some streaming subscription, and I can barely keep track of which one, which week. Those are all symptoms of the two diseases I just described. You've got this really complicated system that was designed by college administrators. So people don't understand that system, and these administrators who created it have just been about as piss poor custodians of it as you can imagine. And even that probably doesn't even make a whole lot of sense if you don't have the background information. And it just stinks. I always struggle about where to begin in answering questions like this.
It is a tough question, and you've given me some things to think about when I'm putting this out there. It's funny that you say if an alien came to Earth and you had to explain, you don't have to go out of this world to bring someone. Just go outside this country.
Sure.
And I don't think folks from other countries would understand our college sports and how it works.
Imagine trying to explain like college volleyball or lacrosse. Penn State just had a nice little run in lacrosse this year, won the Big Ten, got into the quarterfinals of the NCAA tournament. Try explaining that we have these universities, okay? These are supposed to be the highest institutions of education in our society. Oh, but they also have sports teams that play each other. But most of those teams aren't like the team in this one sport, which is football, which the schools get a lot of money because they can put that team on television. And then they turn around and take all the money that they make from broadcasting those teams' games and use it to pay for all these other sports. It's just such a cockamamie system that, again, most people don't really think about. But when it is this now interconnected web that when you look at one of these symptoms, Jim, and let's just stick with athlete compensation and where that television money goes, and you say, now, wait a minute. When the NCAA back in 1980 was controlling what football games got on TV, and so there were a handful of college football games televised each year, and this institution that was supporting all of the college football programs and all the college sports programs in the country was making several million dollars from it. And all the players who created the value by putting their bodies and their brains on the line playing football were getting a free college education out of it. You can say, I don't know if that was totally equal, but it was a pretty good deal. Well, the terms of that deal have not altered in almost half a century. But the amount of money coming in from those TV rights being reaped by the institutions. Now, one thing my colleague on Obligatory, Kevin Horn, always points out is that no one's making a profit. Okay. Nobody's profit. There's no Scrooge McDuck sitting in a money bin full of money at the end of this. It's, as I described, it's money in, money out. But the money in is now being measured in billions of dollars. And yet the remuneration back to the athletes creating the value, the players, never really changed. So that's like a dangling thread. That's a symptom of the disease I just described. And it's a very obvious one that society became aware of within the last decade and said, man, let's treat that disease, or let's treat that symptom. Excuse me. Let's pull on that dangling thread, to mix metaphors. Well, the problem is when you pull that thread, the whole thing starts to unravel because it's all interconnected. And because nobody understands it, the public doesn't understand it, the legislators don't understand it. They pulled the thread, it started to unravel, and nobody understood how to put it back together because they never understood the way it was stitched together in the first place.
Well, that's kind of where I'm headed, where I feel like people are fixing something, but they don't know how to define the problem completely. And I think if you go even one more step back, Chris, Chris, there's nobody whose responsibility it is overrides everything else. My point being, the commissioner of the Big Ten and the Southeast Conference do not care about college sports, except how it affects their conference.
Sure. And so in a way, that's their job.
Right. It's defined as their job, and they have the power because they're the ones negotiating the television contract,
and
not
here's what
the
makes
NCAA.
It even worse, whenever anyone has power, you have to say, where does that power come from? What is its source? From what does it derive? Did you ever watch the old British House of Commons when they would put it on C-SPAN and it was just a bunch of guys in wigs just screaming at each other?
Yes, yes.
Well, that's where they get their power from. They get that from the American equivalent of the loony British House of Commons, which is a bunch of university professors and trustees all over the country. We're talking about dozens. And once you start expanding the umbrella to include all the FBS and FCS schools, hundreds of colleges and universities, they're the bosses of these conference commissioners and NCAA execs. And imagine you have any problem in your life, and those are the people, and that's the group you've got to depend on to fix it. And again, to kind of put a button on this segment, it's like if I don't have any idea how an internal combustion engine works, not the faintest clue, or maybe even that I have an engine in my car, I just know I turn the key, press the gas pedal, and it goes, and it breaks down. Well, first of all, I'm going to have no idea, number one, that it's even broken. Number two, how to even begin to think about properly repairing it. And then imagine the guy who shows up in the mechanic's coveralls is, you know, Rod Erickson. And that's where we're at.
All right. We're going to have to wrap up this segment. And I'm going to start segment two with something. The best run sports league in the country, if not the world, is the NFL. Okay? And when we come back, Chris, I'm going to tell the story of many years ago, before many, if not most, of our listeners were aware, there was something called the AFL. And they were challenging the NFL. And they needed to figure out what to do, and they needed to figure it out pretty quickly. Okay? And in the conversation, there'll be a Broadway Joe reference also. Okay, Chris? But we'll do that when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Chris Buchanani. It's quarter number two of our show. We're defining what is wrong with college sports. And Chris, I teased it before we finished quarter number one. About the NFL, best run league in the country, if not the world, right?
Agreed.
They had an issue, and I'm going to use this example to kind of define for me what the problem is. And the problem is there's nobody who is running this in the best interest of in all of college sports, okay? Many, many years ago, we're going back like 55 years ago, the NFL, first of all, like 60 years ago, was dominant. The AFL came into existence. A lot of these teams that you know of today in the NFL, like the Raiders and the Chargers and the Jets and the Broncos, they were all part of this AFL. They were not in the NFL. Somebody came up with the idea of the Super Bowl, which the NFL, they were going to dominate it in the first two games. They did. The Green Bay Packers dominated with Vince Lombardi. That's why it's the Lombardi Trophy. Year three, this upstart New York Jet team from the AFL, well, they beat the mighty Baltimore Colts. And a guy by the name of Broadway Joe Namath predicted the upset. It happened, and all of a sudden, the whole balance in the world changed. Okay, so what were they going to do? Well, what happened is they discussed a merger. So instead of having competing major like leagues or conferences like Big Ten Southeast Conference, they talked about merging. And no, this is not me advocating for a Big Ten Southeast Conference merger. But they had a commissioner by the name of Pete Rozelle. And one of the problems in this merger, they would create two conferences, the NFC and AFC. Okay. The NFC, by the way, the NFL had more teams than the AFL. So the solution was to move three teams from the NFL or NFC to the AFC to balance the number of teams. The problem was, who would you get to move from the more established conference to the lesser conference, Chris? Who would do that? Who would do the self-sacrifice? Quiz for you. Do you know who the teams were that moved?
If I sat and thought about it, I could probably recall, but for the purposes of moving the conversation along, just say no.
All right. Jim, you're taking too long with this story, is what he's saying.
No. I see where you're going with this, and it's good. So continue, please.
The Browns, the Steelers, and the Colts, who were all part of the NFL and NFC, voluntarily moved to the AFC. Okay. And they created a new television contract that was negotiated under one window, under one authority, Pete Rozelle, the commissioner of the NFL. So the Green Bay Packers would make as much money out of television as the New York Giants. If you're the New York Giants, why in the world would you agree to this? It was in the best interest of everybody, and you had a strong commissioner who convinced everybody and made that happen. My question to you now is, Chris, who in college sports is the Pete Rozelle? Who's the guy in charge? Who's the strength? Who's the person who's looking out for the best interest of all of college sports?
Josh Pate is as close as we got.
Exactly. The guys who negotiates the TV contract, they're the ones who bring it into money. That's done by conference. So the commissioner of the Big Ten and the Southeast Conference, they have the most power. And they don't care about all of college sports. They care about their conference, as we established earlier, Chris. So that's what they're doing. By the way, the commissioner of the ACC, Big 12, they're in the same boat. So now, long way segue to get to what I want to talk to you about is, I think you and I are both of the political persuasion of saying the less government, the better. The problem is in college sports, there's nobody to oversee it and do what's best for college sports. So if there was ever a time, perhaps, for government intervention, maybe it's now about college sports because there were so many people, voters, who care about college sports, Chris. And I think that there are now congressmen who want to grandstand and cater to it, and it might be the only way out.
Yeah, I mean, from the standpoint of theory of government, since you went there, Jim, is to say that, yeah, I am a strident opponent of unnecessary bureaucracy, right? But I'm not an anarchist. I am all for a smart and proper role of government where appropriate. And because we have the system we do in this country, which for all its flaws is still pretty good. As Churchill said, the worst system of all, except for all the others. And I think to your point, the question is college sports? And again, remember, I defined one of our core disease issues being that we struggle to define what that is. But is college sports as an institution, a uniquely American one, as we talked about in the previous subject or previous segment. Is that valuable and precious enough to the public interest that it rises to the level of meriting, and in this case, probably necessitating, some government intervention? And you know, you can say, well, what business of it is Congress? What business does Congress have coming in and regulating college sports? Well, again, to me, because we're struggling to define what college sports is, and to me, the college is really the operative word there. That's like saying, what business did Congress have in authorizing the Land Grant Act that created half these college superpowers? Like, the horse, Jim, is so far out of the barn on, we created these colleges, they were born out of federal fiat, they've been federally subsidized and subsidized further with taxpayer money on the state level for decades and decades, centuries even, better part, but a century or more in the case of most of these institutions, including Penn State. And they've had big time football programs for 75 or more years. Like, we let this happen. It's a thing. Forget you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. There's nothing left in the tube. And so if it follows that college sports are the business of colleges, and in terms of investment of the people's resources, the government's influence and taxpayers' money over years and decades makes college, to some extent, the province of government, then guess what? That is going to extend to college sports, as long as it is not, maybe today, it looks like a de facto professional league, unless it totally breaks off and becomes a private enterprise. I think it's an appropriate forum for the people to say, hey, we value this. We value college sports as distinct from all other forms of sport in this country. And it's mangled beyond recognition. And you, our public servants, have got to get in here and clean it up. I mean, it's just like Congress has such a bad rep now, Jim. But think about this. Whenever this governing body that's supposed to be doing the people's business suggests that maybe they ought to do that, immediately everybody gets hostile and cynical because they've got like a 12% approval rating. But, you know, I mean, it is what it is. Like, there's never a better time to reverse direction than right now. And so if Congress is going to start doing something right, from my selfish perspective, cleaning some of the mess off college football would be an excellent place to start.
I would like to see that happen, okay? But I'm going to go back to my original question to you about defining the problems in college sports. And I'll give you another point from my perspective, which I've been hitting upon a bit, which is essentially everybody's in it for themselves. And as we mentioned, the commissioners of the conferences, hey, their best interest, it's the Big Ten Conference, it's the Southeast Conference, that's who they're most concerned about. And I think another example of this self-serving was when they had the presidential meeting at the White House and everyone was there except for actual players.
Yeah.
And everybody who spoke, it was, they never said, okay, here's the problem. They just started defining what their own issue is. There was a woman there who was part of the United States Olympic Committee. Her only issue was the Olympic sports, by saying, well, you know, if things keep going, Olympic sports are going to be lost in collegiate athletics, and that's going to hurt our Olympic team. My question was, I didn't realize it was the responsibility of the colleges to be the feeder system for the United States Olympic team.
Right. Yeah, I've said that many times. Boo-hoo. I'm sorry you're going to lose your free developmental program. If you care about it so much, vote with your dollars.
But That was when she spoke. That was her issue. Then you have, I don't know if you saw this a week or two ago, Kurt Cignetti was somewhere speaking. And this is Kurt Cignetti, who I kind of agree may be the best coach in college football right now, should be respected and his opinion respected. And he talked about the financial collapse of the college system. It's just not going to work. It can't work over the next couple of years. Kurt, you make $13 million a year.
Yeah.
I'm not sure you're the right guy to say schools are spending too much money and that system's going to collapse. Correct me if I'm wrong, Chris. Tell me if I'm wrong. Has Chris Cignetti decided to give some of that money back to Indiana because he's part of the problem?
I'm glad you brought that up, Jim, because I know we're going to talk about the specifics of this Cruz Cantwell builder the rest of the show. And I think it has a chance to pass, and there's a lot in it I like. But I think they could go a long way by adding in a provision that also caps coaching salaries.
Yes, that is a huge percentage of where this money is going. Hey, you can have it both ways, Kurt Cignetti. Either, hey, look, I did the miraculous winning a national championship at Indiana. I deserve the money. But then you can't blame everybody else but yourself when you say this is a model that can't work. We'll talk more about it when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. I'm Jim Galante. He is Chris Buchanani. We're talking about college sports and specifically this bill that's coming out. And I promise we're going to get to the actual bill itself, Chris. But I was wrapping up. I mentioned the anecdote about Kurt Cignetti complaining about, oh, colleges can't afford this. It's going to be the financial collapse. And he's making $13 million a year. And to me, that's part of the hypocrisy that goes on with these coaches. There's no one looking to oversee the whole thing and in the best interest of collegiate sports. Now, there's been talk for a while of Congress stepping in with different bills, laws that would come in and help out. Now, this bill that's come out, I forget what they're calling it, College Sports Rescue or whatever they're calling it, Chris. Does it have a chance, first of all, to pass? The fact that it's a bipartisan bill, does that help the cause? And I know you have a better background in politics than I do and probably most of our listeners. Explain what it means that this is considered a bipartisan bill.
Well, so it's being introduced in the Senate. It's being co-sponsored by Ted Cruz, who probably most people who follow politics even casually are aware of because he ran for president in 2016. He's a senator from Texas, and he's somewhat of a political firebrand. So maybe he doesn't have the greatest brand, frankly, in terms of a national name recognition. But he's a center of power in the Republican Party and in the Senate. He's a formidable political force. And he comes from Texas, which is infamously one of the reddest states in the union. Now, his bill is being co-sponsored by Maria Cantwell, who's a name most people probably don't know. To be honest, before we started recording today, Jim, I had to look her up just to make sure she was, in fact, from Washington, which is one of the bluest states in the union. So Cruz is a Democrat, Cruz is a Republican, Cantwell a Democrat. And, you know, not for nothing, both Washington and Texas are home to big-time college football programs. And both of those states have seen the flagship programs in those states impacted in a variety of ways because of all the change that has beset college football since the onset of this decade. So in a lot of ways, I think they're good banner carriers for this. And for the two of them to be teamed up in agreement on the provisions of this bill, which I think are very smartly just kept pretty tight and pretty specific. Although, as I said before the break, I think it would probably be good and in the spirit of what they're trying to do and maybe a way to build some goodwill with a broader cross-section of the public to put some coaching salary caps in there as well. I don't think it'll happen, but I think it would help. But in general, they've kept the bill pretty tight and simple, and they've said, hey, we may disagree on every other issue facing the country right now. As a Democratic senator from the state of Washington and a Republican senator from the independent nation of Texas. But we're going to come together on this, and we've specifically designed this bill to hit only a limited number of key provisions so it has the best chance of pulling in support from both sides of the aisle in both chambers of the legislature. And I do think with all the noise that the White House has made about college football since the start of Trump's second term, and quite frankly, probably his need to get any kind of moment of positivity and goodwill right now, if this bill were to hit his desk, I think he'd sign it. So I do think there is, Jim, a far more realistic chance of this legislation actually becoming law than any other attempt to fix this through government intervention or legislation. Now, it would still prompt a bunch of lawsuits, but you got to start somewhere. You got to lay a marker down. And frankly, I think it helps a lot that if you went out and poll tested the elements of this bill nationwide, especially among college football fans, practically every one of them would get majority support. And they would probably even hold up against criticism from the Jay Billises and Darren Heitners of the world, who are, I mentioned before, I'm not an anarchist when it comes to college sports. Those guys absolutely are just anarcho-capitalists.
All right. Well, let's hit a couple of these points. Some of them, as you said, I think would get overwhelming support. First of all, undergrads get one free transfer. I emphasize undergrad because if you get your degree, go to grad school, you could get one more. But essentially, you get one free transfer. If you want to transfer a second time, you got to sit out a year. I think the whole world would say yes to that.
Yes. In fact, I'm just thinking about it. I'm kind of indexing my head. All the conversations I've had with college football fans since the transfer portal started, I think that's the most popular suggestion I've gotten from people. Why can't we just do it this way? And then, you know, you get one and then you got to sit out a year. Again, like, you, not too many things in this country anymore, Jim, can get 60%+ support. I think that hovers in the 75 to 80 range.
Here's my question on that. And I kind of could fit and ask this question on many of the other points. What's the difference between, you know, Congress putting out this law with one free transfer versus the NCAA making that a law when it gets challenged in court?
Well, you know, I mean, it's just quite obviously, like, if it passes in a bill, that has the weight of having been written into the law by the legislature, which is representative of the people.
And I think, again, if the people are all for it, there's less likelihood of it being challenged or being challenged successfully. Let's hit a couple of the others that I think are also popular.
I think real quickly, Jim, I think that's a really good point. Absolutely. Public pressure and public sentiment, I don't care what anybody says, it factors into the way judges rule.
Oh, absolutely.
And if this goes through Congress and it carries with it the imprimatur of therefore representing, like in some sense of it, an expression of the people's will, a judge is going to be absolutely less likely to just arbitrarily strike it down.
Which again, circling back, is why that bipartisan thing is also helpful. It's not being pushed by one party or the other.
And court of public opinion matters.
Yes.
Too. I mean, part of the reason why we are where we at is not just like the O'Bannon decision in the House case and Alston, but because public opinion turned against college sports and the NCAA so decisively, that kind of paved the way for all of those things to be a smooth road in the court of law. So court of public opinion is important.
It is. All right. Here's another one. 5-year window to play 5 seasons. Forget the red shirt. Forget the, oh, you could play 4 games and still get a red shirt. Forget everything else, all the hardship, everything else. 5 years, play 5 seasons, Chris.
I'm a true curmudgeonly purist, Jim. Not only does that make me sad, but I honestly wish freshmen were ineligible. But, I wish for a lot of other things. And as they say, you can wish in one hand and do something else in the other and see which fills up first. I'll take the 5 years.
I'm with you. And again, for those people much younger than us, there was actually a time when freshmen could not play. They weren't eligible. So you had to be a sophomore. So you had 3 years. That first year you couldn't play. There were actually freshman teams. And which always leads me to, I want to share the story. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, when he went to UCLA as Lou Alcindor, he was a freshman, wasn't allowed to play on the varsity team. Now, this varsity team would go on to win the national championship. He and his fellow freshmen, in a scrimmage against a varsity team that would win the national championship, the freshman won, which to me is one of the great stories about that rule ever. All right. Next up, Chris, and I think this is a more of a basketball issue right now. If you've had a pro contract, you can't come back and play in college.
Yeah, I mean, again, this goes back to what I talked about in the first segment. What is college sports? And do we actually care about the college part of it? And if the answer is yes, then hey, does that seem like somewhat of an arbitrary and unfair standard for some people? It sure does. You know what else isn't fair, Jim?
Life.
Correct.
Well, and just for those to understand, within in Europe, as opposed to here where there's not the collegiate sports system that we have, there are players playing professional basketball to some degree who are like 16 years old. And before they're even what we consider out of high school age, they're playing with a pro contract. And those players who are playing in a pro league that could best be described as semi-pro or minor league, hey, they may look for the opportunity to come to the States and play big-time collegiate basketball here after doing that for a year or two. That's part of it. But it's expanded from there, Chris. There are players, American players, he'll sign like a contract with the NBA or with the NBA G League, and they want to come back and play in college now.
Neat. Life is full of trade-offs. If you want to be a professional basketball player, nobody's telling you you can't. And if you want to go the route of being a college basketball player and come to college and have, again, ostensibly still a free college degree and be a college student, a member of the student body, an actual student at the college, playing college basketball. And by the way, still make money. If you want to do that, nobody's stopping you. What we're saying is you can't do both.
Exactly. All right. Chris, when we come back, we're going to hit some of the tougher ones, tougher aspects here, and I can't wait to hear your take on them. We'll do that right after this break.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Chris, I'm Jim. We're going through this bipartisan bill that may just have a chance of getting itself through Congress and on the president's desk. And there's a lot of aspects to this. We've been going through them one by one. I'm now going to hit the tougher ones, Chris. And there probably isn't a bigger one than the crackdown on what I'll call phony NIL deals. You could put it that they lack valid business purpose. What does that mean? Well, they came to the agreement out of the House committee bill about, not bill, not a law, but a ruling where the schools can now compensate collegiate athletes. The number is a calculation. Right now it's at $21 million. I think some schools thought, well, that kind of acts as a salary cap. Players could still do NIL, but they would be legitimate deals. Well, it turns out they worked their way around it. Yes, there's the $21 million going directly from the schools, but they kind of weasel ways to do NIL stuff, commit money to the players, and then they kind of backfill the responsibilities for the players. So now this bill supposedly would do a crackdown on phony NIL deals. Would that actually work, Chris?
Well, the devil's in the details on that. The point is, what everybody has been clamoring for is a salary cap, number one. And let's just set to the side for a moment the legality of that. Fans don't care about legality. They care about product quality. And the thing I hear over and over and over again is, why can't there be a salary cap? Well, that's to ensure competitive balance, right? So that you don't have certain schools that are just able to buy their way into contention and other schools that are left completely behind. And, oh, yeah, by the way, that's not a business decision. That's like an institutional culture decision because these aren't professional sports organizations. They're colleges and universities, which have a whole host of other problems right now. So there's the salary cap. And then the other thing is, can we please try to get to a point where there are no more Chaz Coleman situations where a guy gets $3.5 million, but it's not really to play football. It's for his name, image, and likeness. So he can just like not show up to anything, and you still got to pay him, because if you withheld any money, that would be a tacit admission that you were paying him to play football, not to like pretend sign autographs or show up at a car dealership for 2 hours and make $1 million for his time. So, yes, you just got to impose a cap of some sort. And immediately, as I said, the Jay Billises and Darren Heitners of the world are going to immediately cry, oh, it's illegal restraint of trade. This is un-American. You're telling people what they can make. Well, this is why it comes back to what we talked about at the top of the show, Jim. What is college sports as a unique institution? How important is it to us as the American people? And what right does government have to regulate it and to define it? Well, I think it's fair to say, Jim, that you and I would both agree that people should be able to earn what they're worth, right?
Yep.
And we also, in general, don't like the idea of the government coming in and capping people's earning potential. Yes?
Of course.
But do you have a problem with the NFL's salary cap?
No.
Neither do I.
I do not.
And that's because you talked about the NFL as one of the most successful sports leagues on the planet. That's because they figured out a long time ago, and you described it very aptly with your AFL-NFL story, that it's not NFL franchise owners against each other in a cutthroat business environment. It's that whole team. It's all 32 NFL owners against everyone else. And so it made more sense from a business perspective for them to operate like a commune internally, thus allowing them to operate as a ruthless capitalist, you know, mercenary in the marketplace. So NFL football is more competitive against all the other professional sports leagues and most of the other competition for our eyeballs, our time, and our dollars, because in any given year, the majority of that league can have fan bases that start the season legitimately dreaming of a playoff run and even a Super Bowl trophy. I think the Seahawks were picked to be like 28th in the league before the season last year. And that was a calculated business decision, and the salary cap is a big part of it. So how does that apply to college sports? Why is this not a legal restraint of trade? Well, because I believe the federal government and the people have a vested interest in the enterprise of college sports. And so you can't have 32 owners, or however many they had back in 1968, and Pete Rozelle say, we've got to do this. Because I just described, it's like the British House of Commons. It's the chickens with their heads cut off trying to run this thing. So where is the leadership going to come? Well, it can come from the top down from Washington, because the people have invested a lot of money in setting this whole enterprise up to begin with. And, you know, you and I talked about this on the phone before we recorded today's show. We were talking about this potential for a salary cap. And I said, hey, if you want to come be a college football player and derive all the benefits thereof, including what I'm sure would end up being like very, very generous compensation over and above your free college degree, which is not nothing. Just ask anybody who's paying off student loans or parents who are saving to send their kids to college, then you can do it. And if you don't want to live within the confines of the imposed cap, and if there truly is this thriving market to pay Chaz Coleman $4 million and some college basketball prospect I just heard about who's worth $6 million, then guess what? You and I both believe, Jim, that the market will fill the vacuum. But let me just ask you this. Do you think you have more value and marketability if you are one of the most talented high school football players in America? If you're a Penn State Nittany Lion, or if you're a Birmingham Dragon? Where do you think there's more value?
Obviously, it's already been established. If you're a Penn State Nittany Lion or an Ohio State Buckeye or a Georgia Bulldog.
And do you know who bankrolled the institution that allowed that value to pass on to you, to accrue, hold, maintain that value, and then pass it to you as a player?
Would that be the public, Chris?
You damn Skippy. So guess what? If you want totally unrestrained salary structure, nobody's stopping you. But then you have a right to liberty, life, and the pursuit of happiness. You do not have a right to access that value store, which is public property.
Well, here's the thing, Chris. And in a lot of ways, this is the universities need to be protected from themselves. Okay, there's part of me that wants to argue, no one's putting a gun to your head to spend $40 million on your football team. So if that's going to destroy the university, well, that's self-inflicted. You're doing it to yourself. But let's say, okay.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about the schools that are pulling from their general funds, which are funded by taxpayer and tuition payers, to cover these athletic bills. At least Penn State doesn't do that. Penn State fans forget. That's the way most of the other half lives.
Well, here's the thing, though. There's the money that goes in, that the $21 million that we talk about that goes directly to the college athletes. There's actual legitimate NIL money, when you see a quarterback who's a Heisman candidate and he does the Nissan Heisman House commercials and he's being paid for that, it's legitimate.
Absolutely.
Then there's that, and they're not talking about or should not be talking about restricting that NIL money that's legit. It's the gray money in between that these teams, they can't help themselves. They can't police themselves. They need an outside police force, and I hope this will work. I want to hit the other ones. There's a couple more that I think need to be hit. One is no Super League. And it's funny, they said if you're a billion-dollar enterprise, you can't merge. Essentially, they're saying the Big Ten and Southeast Conference can't merge and break away. I don't think anyone really wants to see that happen, Chris.
Nope. Bad for the fans. You want us to come in and bail you guys out. These are the terms of the deal. Totally fair and reasonable. Okay. And good.
Okay. The other one, and the background is the TV contracts. And this kind of goes to the NFL conversation we had, where right now it's the conferences that get the TV contracts. The Big Ten, Southeast Conference, they're the most valuable. They don't want to give that up. The other folks say, gee, let's merge that all together. So the ACC, the Big 12, they will go along with the Big Ten and Southeast Conference and do one television contract. And the pie would be split a lot more equal. No way in the world the Southeast Conference or the Big Ten want to have that happen. They will fight that tooth and nail. That's why I'm real interested. Everywhere I read, Chris, what I'm hearing is conferences could pull their TV rights like the NFL. What does that mean?
Here's the thing, Jim. When you neglected your opportunity to fix your own house for 25 to 35 years, you mortgaged your right to pick and choose the terms of engagement when you ultimately had to go begging to Congress to do it for you. So, you know, is it fair to the power conferences? Probably not. But as I've said earlier in this conversation, what else isn't fair?
Life.
And my message to Petiti and Sankey is, guys, that's life.
Well, the thing of it is, like I said, it keeps saying they could pull their TV rights. It doesn't say they will or that they have to. So if you're the Southeast Conference and the Big Ten, you just say, well, we could, but we're choosing not to.
Yeah, probably. Right? I do think that's going to be one of the snags in the whole process here.
And as long as that happens, the Southeast Conference, the Big Ten, their advantage is that big money TV contract. That gives them the advantage in every way over the rest of the conferences. And that's the hill that they would die on. All right, Chris, thank you so much. Really great to have you on. Thank all of you for tuning in. You know what? How about next time you come back here for the next edition of the Keystone Kickoff Show?
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.